Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast called Top Insights from the Best, offering you top ideas shared by the most successful CEOs, chief revenue officers, other sales and marketing leaders, investors, and business experts to help you make your sales number and accelerate your revenue.
And today I have a very special guest who I think is extremely intelligent and successful and interesting and brings some super interesting insights. And the reason that I think he's the best and I want to introduce him, his name is Ernest Owusu, and he's super interesting. And I think he falls into the best category because I've seen himself as a sales leader at Sixth Sense. He basically prospects like some of the best sales I've seen. He runs a team. He's going to tell us about it. But what's really amazing is he was an NFL player. He'll tell us about how he brings his NFL know-how to sales. So with no further ado, Ernest, welcome to the show and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And it's a great introduction. So I really appreciate that.
I absolutely believe everything I say. So, well, great. So tell us quickly about yourself. You have an amazing story. It's super interesting. Don't hold it back. You know, everything about the NFL experience, you name it.
Yeah, sure thing. So again, my name is Ernest Owusu. I head the sales development efforts here at Sixth Sense. And I guess a little bit of my background is, you know, first generation, I had the opportunity to learn kind of later on that I was going to be pretty good at football. And, you know, through high school recruiting, I had the opportunity to go to UC Berkeley and play football at Cal, which was awesome. Go Bears, I'll have to say that. And as I kind of made my way through the school, I started realizing that there's this massive opportunity that I had to eventually get to the NFL. And it was something that I kind of always wanted my entire life, but, you know, such a hard task, a hard goal to actually hit. So I didn't know if I was going to actually be able to achieve it. But once my junior, senior year came around, I was starting to make some plays and getting really big and, you know, feeling myself a lot of different ways. It happened. And I got the opportunity to start my career out with the Minnesota Vikings, where I started as a defensive end. And it was awesome. You know, the experience of getting there, of playing with people that like I saw as idols growing up, and I watched these people to learn how to play my game, and they're the ones sitting in the same room with me, was something that I'll never forget for the rest of my life. And when that opportunity came, I just took the bull by the horns and made the most of it. Unfortunately, I did have an injury, which happens to a lot of NFL players. And, you know, I had to make the transition outside of football. And, you know, when I was trying to make that transition, and there are a lot of, it's tough leaving the NFL. A lot of people don't really talk too much about that because you kind of expect that you go there, you make a lot of money, and you're just done with anything afterwards. But a lot of NFL players really struggle with their life after football. And for me, it was a little bit scary at first because my entire life had been so focused on making it there and being great. And then I kind of came to the realization, like a lot of players do, where there was something else that I had to do afterwards. And as I was trying to find a way to make it work, I wanted to make sure that I had a strong grasp on what actually got me there and what actually made me super successful as an NFL athlete. And the more people I started talking to, talk to my network, I started to read some books, talk to different people, I started seeing this weird connection between sales and a lot of different capacities. And honestly, I had never thought of myself as getting into sales. I think in a weird way, a lot of people kind of look at sales down at times. I don't really know why, but I started seeing it and I was like, okay, you know, I have to at least explore this out a little bit. And more people started talking to, and then I finally just kind of took a leap of faith and did the whole interview process and found my first role as an SDR at a company and kind of just really applied all the things that got me to the NFL into that role. And before I knew it, I was an SDR. Then I had my own book of business as an AE. And then after that, I started leading teams, which is more or less what I'm doing right now. And I love it just as much, I'd say, as football. It's been awesome doing it.
Oh, that's great. So you were the Vikings and at Buccaneers, right?
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Where Tom Brady went.
Yes.
I wish you were there now.
I do too.
I'm a huge Tom Brady fan. So a couple of things. You said you were an NFL defensive end.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're a big guy then.
Yes, I am. So don't let the video confuse you. I'm about six foot 5 inches tall. And,
All right, so for all the listeners, don't mess with Ernest. He is 6'5", defensive end. If he's prospecting you, be nice, take the call. All right, I'm joking. I'm sure you're a great guy and you would never hurt a fly, but at the very least, if you're listening, don't play football against Ernest.
I would never.
Not a good idea. I know I wouldn't. So let's talk about the NFL really briefly. This is interesting. So let me ask you a couple of things that I think they slightly relate to sales. Talk to me, please, about like who was your favorite coach? I mean, obviously you probably had numerous, but in the NFL, like who's the coach that left the best impression and most impact on you?
Yeah, sure. So I would definitely have to say my head coach in the Buccaneers, Greg Schiano. Greg Schiano actually came from Rutgers, where I was his first year as a head coach. I will say a lot of the veterans who have been in the game for a period of time kind of rubbed them the wrong way a little bit because of his style. But the reason why I liked him was he was so focused on the fundamentals, on finding ways to improve like every person. It didn't really matter, you know, how long you've been in the league or like how you're producing. He was always constantly reinforcing the fundamentals through a lot of different drills we did. And I respected that because that's kind of more or less of what we needed to be a successful team. And it's not really about the kind of player who makes it and is doing really well and is going to be eventual Hall of Famer and just kind of being satisfied with their skill set. It's always kind of trying to find ways to improve. And that was a huge part of his coaching philosophy that honestly I took away with what I do with my team right now.
Okay, I want to talk about that in a couple of minutes. So interesting. So great coach because of the fundamentals. I love it. What about teamwork? Obviously in the NFL, it's a team sport, right? Like, what do you think makes a good team? And what are some of the team building activities you remember there that, you know, the listeners here for, you know, CEOs, CROs, investors can learn for their teams, especially sales teams?
Yeah, sure. So it's interesting with teams. So I've been obviously in a lot of different teams and, you know, in a football career, you can see a lot of like dynamics as to like whether or not a team is going to be good very early on. And the most common thing that I've seen is like, so one, talent isn't necessarily enough. You have to have the strongest culture by and far. And I've been on teams where I even go back to my time at Cal where we had a team that had about five eventual first round draft picks. So people that were going to make a lot of money and a lot of noble names everyone knows right now, like DeSean Jackson, for example. And we ended up that year at 7-6. And it's not because like we didn't have enough talent. It wasn't because we didn't have enough coaching. It was the culture on the team wasn't strong enough to get us to where we wanted to go. And the reality is like, if you want to have a strong team, you got to first and foremost, before anything else, start with a strong culture. And for us, like I am always reinforcing that every single week without fail, because like the teams that have a strong culture and their leader makes it a priority, you can get through anything. Like whether it's good, whether it's bad, you know, with COVID, whatever it may be, that's the fundamental. And I guess in terms of things that I've kind of brought on from the NFL, with that culture is a healthy competition, which you definitely would see in the NFL. And there are a lot of different ways to do that in a sales environment, such as like little spiffs here and there. Or one thing we currently have in our team, especially now that we're in a remote environment, is we have this fun competition where we do like a meme or an image of the week where basically two of my SDRs had to pick a sales-related meme that they think is the funniest and share with the entire team and have them vote on who did the best. And it's a super small way to compete, but you do want to kind of reinforce that attitude of trying to always find a way to win at all costs and kind of be on top. So having that culture where people are very much focused on the entire mission, people that are very much focused on healthy competition is something that I've always seen as an effective strategy that good leaders do and good teams constantly have.
Well, it's interesting. You say healthy competition. I think you're right. I mean, in sales, it's a sport, right? In a way, right? Like you're competing for the score, but healthy is a key word because there's a balance. You want to have a competition, but we're not to a point where it creates a toxic culture, right? That's very dangerous. But you said something interesting about you had stars, right? DeSean Jackson, right? Phenomenal player. But you said that the score at the end of the season was not a winning score. Nope. Or actually 7-6, it was a winning score, but it was almost like it wasn't great. But is it that the coaches at that point didn't do a good job of creating the right teamwork and the right, okay, interesting. So the coaches didn't do that.
It's definitely a combination, but everything always rises and falls with leadership. And I think when you go into a year like we had, where we realized we had that much talent, like a lot of times people just focus on like the tactics you need to do and the strategy as opposed to like what the team as a collective unit needs to do to come together and win together. And the reality with that team was we had all these phenomenal athletes that, again, these are very notable NFL names right now. But because we were so focused on like strategy during games, practice execution, but nothing along the lines of like how we would take care of each other and how like we were all equal individuals, then when it came time to be in the fourth quarter, and I've seen this so many times where, you know, you're in Colorado, it's high altitude, you can't breathe, and you want to quit, you want to stop playing, but something in you like, you know what, the person right next to me needs me to make a play right now, so I have to fight through it and come through. And when you have a team that isn't focused on culture, it's really hard to have that individual who's willing to kind of think of someone else as opposed to themselves and fight through and find a way to make a play.
I totally agree with you. I think it's without the right culture. So like, I'm a big, obviously, football fan. Urban Meyer, in his book, talks about Above the Line, talks about culture drives behavior and behavior drives results. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I think it's surprising that even in the NFL, that coaches are not putting culture and that team chemistry creation first, because it'll drive the behavior that's necessary for teamwork. So you're leading a team. Kind of let's talk about you in sales, right? So by the way, you know, NFL to sales, like sales is a very competitive environment. Like, were you prepared for that? Was the NFL a little bit easier than that, or what?
Yeah, so I'll definitely say sales is very competitive, but not nearly as competitive as the NFL. A lot of different ways, just in terms of the competition, in terms of whether or not you're going to keep your job. That's a huge thing in the NFL.
Tell us about that. Tell us, because, you know, like in sales, like obviously, like you're only as good as your last quarter or whatever, but or your last year. But like, tell us about that.
Yeah. You know, in sales, you're only as good as your last quarter. In the NFL, you're only as good as your last play. I've seen so many times where a teammate is like in the middle of a game and he makes a mistake, comes over to us on the sideline, is like, I know they're going to fire me after this game. And he's right. Because like the margin of error is so small and there's such a wide pool of talent that like a coach can easily say, you know what, you just dropped that punt return, you're out. You just jumped off sides and fourth down and it caused him to win a game. See you later. And that was something that I had to get really used to in the NFL. But obviously within sales, like I get a little bit more slack. I can have a really bad cold call or I can have a really bad negotiation talk and still keep my job. But that's one of those things that I took away. I was basically hardened, if you want to say it, from my NFL experience. And it's a little bit easier in the sales environment now.
Well, it's like the equivalent, I guess, for all those listeners who are maybe abroad outside of the U.S., they may not be watching football, but you know, an equivalent of the last play could be in sales, comparable to getting, you know, prospecting and maybe saying something wrong and not getting someone to show up to a meeting in a way that's like, you obviously shouldn't have said that and you're fired. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really cutthroat to your point. I remember, was it Jonas Gray on the Patriots some years back that he was a star running back, was on the cover of Sports Illustrated that month. Mm-hmm. And then he had an amazing game, like a lot of yardage, like star performance. But then the next Monday morning, he showed up late by like half an hour to an hour at Bill Belichick's weekly kickoff meeting with the players, mm-hmm. and he was fired.
I've seen that so many times.
He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, I had a teammate who was our former first round draft pick, I'm not going to say his name, franchise player on the team. We had a rule in Tampa Bay. It was super, super disciplined team. We had a rule that the meetings in the morning started at 8 a.m. You got to be in desk, bottle on the table, pen in hand, notebook open, start the meeting, no matter what. So if you're walking into the meeting, if you were kind of fumbling around with your backpack, then you were considered late. We had a starter who that happened to him. He never saw a play after that just because of how cutthroat things can be. And that's just how it works sometimes.
Fired for being late to a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, just based on that alone, I don't think anybody's going to get fired in a corporate environment for being late to a meeting. But people don't understand it. Like, being late is bad.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of people, I bet, even on your team, don't acknowledge that. But I know that happens, that they just show up late as if it's not a big deal. But, like, you get fired for that, like, in the NFL. But many places, like, don't. It's not okay. It's not.
Well, you know? I will say, it's part of our team's culture to not make that something that we do. And if we do recognize it, then we address it. But yeah, it's the accountability, I should say.
Accountability. Yes.
How we conduct ourselves is, you know, sometimes people kind of take that for granted. But in the NFL, you cannot make a mistake with that. And I've seen it so many times where people just got released because they made an error in that direction.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, when I manage teams, I always make it very clear, like punctuality, you know, to team meetings, obviously nobody will get fired, but I do point out, please, you know, this is important. But mm-hmm. everybody's waiting. There's a whole team. I think you coming from the NFL, you have a whole different level of discipline. I love it. Let's talk about several things that you bring to your sales leadership role from the NFL. I want to kind of pick your brain on recruiting effectively, because obviously NFL recruiting is a really, to some degree, scientific process. Although I would argue, compared to my favorite coach, Bill Belichick, everyone else is still playing checkers when he's playing chess in recruiting, right? I mean, come on. It's obvious, right? He brought on Tom Brady. Okay, it's not just Tom Brady. How about Edelman? All the scouting reports said, too slow. They actually had verbatim, they said he's a gimmicky player. Mm-hmm. And he was actually a quarterback in college, and he's now a wide receiver. The greatest catch of all time, Super Bowl with Atlanta Falcons, right? The impossible catch. And yet nobody wanted him, right? But then there are other players. Look, Cam Newton right now, right? The other teams didn't really want to bring him on, right? So, and I hope he's going to recover. He's not, you know, he has COVID. We need him back. But what is it that Belichick is doing? And what did you learn about recruiting effectively that you bring to sales and have a different sort of mindset than other sales leaders that I would argue a lot of them I see, I mean, team building, really. Mm-hmm. I don't mean just like recruiting with a headhunter. I'm talking about building a winning high-performance team, but doing it correctly. Like, what are you bringing to sales from what you learn in the NFL?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's pretty black and white in the NFL. Like, you see the person who runs the fastest, jumps the highest, is the strongest, and you believe that he or she will be the best, and that's not always the case.
But, interesting.
One thing people think is, like, a lot of these tangible factors, and even on the sales side, like, what school did you go to? Do you have sales experience? How many deals have you closed? What was your previous quota attainment? Like, those are comfortable. People are comfortable with that because you can rely on data. But the reality is, similar to a Tom Brady, similar to an Edelman, there are intangible factors that people have that you have to have the ability to spot them and know why they're important. If you can spot them, you can incorporate them. But it's definitely very much of a mix of science and art. But the problem is, on the art side, people don't equip themselves the right way with finding ways to assess that. You have to honor both the tangible and the intangible. And people are either a lot more comfortable on the tangible side or, you know, more comfortable on the intangible. But if it's the intangible, they don't really know how to assess it. And that's kind of where they have problems.
I agree. What I really like is that you said you've articulated it correctly. You have to equip yourself to be able to spot that, right? Because, and I think they talk about Bill Belichick. He comes in, I think Edelman was interviewed. He said Bill Belichick comes in with a different mindset, like a priori, before he even starts the draft or recruiting players, right? He comes in being intentional about how to think differently from all the other coaches. And it's interesting. I also heard him and Bob Kraft speak, and they talk about, they use the word something like collecting great people. Mm-hmm. But it's not just like what you said, just looking at the numbers only. I think the way I understand is that you have to first, as a senior sales executive, which is like who are the listeners here, majority of them are C-level senior sales executives, you have to first, the onus is on you, rather, to develop a system internally into which you can bring in talent that will succeed within your system. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't first start out by creating that system, because people say that Tom Brady is a system quarterback, sure, but he's phenomenal. Six Super Bowls, right? Six rings, right? And what, like 9 trips to the Super Bowl? Mm-hmm. Long story short, it doesn't start with recruiting correctly. It starts with building a system. And then you build a winning team based on understanding, and to your point, equipping yourself with the right mindset and ability to spot those intangibles.
Yeah.
And I think I see there's not enough of that out there. I think you articulated that correctly.
If you even just think about it, right? So like there are different selling motions. You have certain transactional sales, you have more consultative sales. Even for an inside seller, there are some people who are super quantitative, really smart. If you throw them in a transactional sale, they're not going to thrive because they don't have the grit. They don't have the persistence that selling a transactional sale might require. On the flip side, if you put them into a more consultative sale, they will thrive. So it's kind of, to your point, like being really honest with yourself as to what kind of team you have, what's your current system, and then identifying the tangible and intangible qualities that align with them and recruiting appropriately.
I agree with you. The other sort of context, though, is that I have seen a great head coach, meaning the chief revenue officer, VP of sales, if you are very good, you could take somebody who's versatile. Look at what Belichick does. I've seen so many times where the executives say, no, this person has done only transactional sales. There's no way they can do enterprise sales. Mm-hmm. Why? That you're just saying you're not a good enough coach. Mm-hmm. Right? Because think about Edelman. He was a quarterback. Now he's a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Right? It's things like that. How many times does Bill Belichick have this kind of next man up mentality that you know, somebody, he like even switches, like, I don't know, like you could be a defensive end, but what other position can you play if you're coached effectively?
Exactly. And that's why it comes down to the fact that like, you have to really know what qualities make that role successful and not limit yourself based upon past experiences.
Because exactly. You got to look for the versatility.
Exactly. The past experience doesn't always indicate what they're going to do within your system. It's more on you as a leader to identify what it takes and coach accordingly.
Couldn't agree more. I think I see that so frequently that in order to build high-performance teams, I've always intended to think outside the box. I mean, I recorded a podcast with Joe Caprio, who used to be on my team, you know, some years ago, and he sold laundry services to like restaurants and hospitals before he came to software. Software companies looked at his background and said, no way, we're not going to take him. Yet he was like one of the best sales reps and ultimately became an executive. He's now a chief revenue officer and a co-founder of a software company. Another one is Joe Knight. He was a defensive coordinator at Framingham State here in Massachusetts. He couldn't get into software, right? Because everybody looked at him and was like, you have no software experience. He was my best sales rep, and he's now extremely successful in sales and continually just growing and growing and growing. Mm-hmm. So the point is that you can't just judge people in the past experience. You really have to think about those intangibles and spot them, be equipped to spot them and have the right mindset. And I think you can get some amazing people on your team by thinking outside of the box. So I love that. So let's talk about, you talked about fundamentals earlier with your favorite coach. Let's talk about fundamentals and how you build them with your sales team. Now, you're running a team of how many reps?
Sure. So right now, the entire team is about 20 people total.
20 people, and you have outbound and inbound.
Exactly. Yeah. So I guess we call it more allbound. It's basically a mix between inbound and outbound. That's correct.
I love that. I think it's always all bound. It's not one or the other. And there's so many reasons for that. But that's great. So 20 people, you're a leader of a team of, you know, you're a head coach of 20 people. Talk to us, please, about, you know, how do you onboard and effectively train and develop and coach fundamentals? And what else do you do?
Yeah, sure. So I think it's even important to kind of give the context behind the fundamentals, right? So I explained it earlier about my best coach in the NFL, Greg Schiano. So there's a statistic in football that it's called the turnover battle. The team that is able to take the ball away from the other team more times in the game significantly wins more than other teams. It doesn't matter what your record is. It doesn't matter how good you are. It's more about the team that can just control the ball more wins the most. So we had this drill. For us, it was kind of like monotonous. We had to do it every single day. But we had this drill with the Bucks where literally for about a 7 to 8 minute period, all we would do as a team and in like little circuits is go through each of the different scenarios in which we could turn the ball over so we can get it. So then we actually get to the game. If we are faced with that, it's second nature for us. When it comes to fundamentals, first off, like knowing why that fundamental is really important, not just doing something for the sake of doing it, but incorporating it to your overall strategy. And with my team, the most important things that we have within the success of my team, first and foremost, we want to recruit from a competitive advantage standpoint. Like I need to make sure that I'm recruiting really well. So when I do get them on board and they do fit those criteria, then they're successful. But the fundamentals they learn early on are the most important thing. And we have a strong understanding of what it takes to win and which fundamentals are most important. And we hammer that home before anything else as people are onboarding. And one thing in particular, the minute we catch wind that someone has kind of slipped on any of those fundamentals, we push them back to that portion of the training and have them do it again. I don't care if you're a 200% performer. I don't care if you're about to get promoted as an AE. The minute I sniff a little bit of loss of fundamentals, you're going back to the training because the fundamentals are ultimately get you where you want to go.
Absolutely. That's great. And that onboarding, that development, that coaching is so critical to success in sports and in sales. By the way, what is your leadership style?
Yeah. So I would definitely say that I'm more of the servant leader. It's me. It's my job to kind of have an understanding of, you know, what my team is going through, like what challenges they face and be as much of a resource as possible to them. And on that note, especially with inside sales BDR teams, these are people that are either doing career transitions or the people that are like, you know, straight out of college, we lead more through empowering them as opposed to kind of fear-based. And when you combine that combination of empowerment as well as servitude, I think as a leader, you can go a really far way. And a really far way in terms of getting your people to not just perform, but also want to perform for you. I've seen it time and time again for myself as well as my managers that people don't want to miss their number because they want us to win because they're so focused on the fact that we're serving them. And you always want to have a system where your players or your reps see you in that light because it makes it really easy to march towards any goal.
I totally agree. I think I aim and sort of hope to be seen as a servant leader to my teams as well. And I think servant leader is probably the most effective leadership type, in my opinion. And I think it's basically a lot of people shy away from using the word servant because they think it means you're subordinate to everyone else. But in a way, it just really means you're a supportive leader. You're not, I talk about this a lot, it's like, it's just, you're not trying to meddle. You're not trying to simply check in and check up. When you're having conversations with your team, when you're leading, you're looking for a way to unblock them, right? Or put them on the right path to win. Do whatever it takes for your team to be better with you than they would be without you because you're helping get rid of the obstacles for them. That's what being a supportive, empowering leader is when you're a servant leader, right? That it's a supportive leader. No, I love that. I love that. And I think when we spoke some time ago, you know, before here, you talked about you have these like three C's. Tell us a little bit about that. I really like that framework.
Yeah, sure. So I think the strongest motivating factor that we have for our team is we call them the three C's. It's career, culture, compensation. Our job as managers and leaders is to make sure that all three of those at all times are always intact. So we have to have a strong ability of where someone wants to go with their career. And in that supportive manner, make sure that we're taking steps and helping them go in that particular direction. Whether that's something that's going to happen a year from now, 3 years from now, whatever it may be. Like the career is so important for our team that we have to use that as a motivating factor. Compensation, obviously we're in sales. A huge driving factor of success is whether or not someone's going to make money. So the minute you have a team in which the people feel like they're not properly getting compensated, that's when things kind of struggle a little bit. And then last but not least, this is the most important, I think, is just definitely the culture. You have to have an environment where people are happy to be at work. They're feeling supported. They want to invest themselves in the overall mission of the team. They want to see everyone succeed. And the culture, honestly, is probably the one I enjoy the most because it's a lot of fun and a lot of experiences from my NFL time are pulled from that. But you have to have all three. And again, the minute I've seen a team kind of start dipping in the wrong direction with one of those three, that's when things can get pretty hairy. And we always try and make sure that we're supporting the team across the board with all of those.
Absolutely. And I want to come back to the culture in a minute, but I also remember you had three D's from the NFL. Tell us about the three D's now.
Yeah. So the three D's. So as I mentioned earlier, it's really challenging transitioning from football, especially because when you got to think about it, like your entire life, you built this skill set, you're at the top of your game. And for some people, they have a really tough time trying to translate into something else. So there's this interesting statistic, and I don't know the exact number, but in the NFL, after a 10-year period, most players, they have a situation where they're basically facing three Ds, of which they're either dead, in debt, or divorced. And it's a really harsh reality of, you know, what you think about when those players that you watched growing up and the ones that are your idols. But the reality is that transition after football is really tough, and a lot of players don't make it out of it. It's really challenging.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And I think everybody who's in sales and struggles with, you know, hitting their number right now, just remember, you're lucky if you don't have the three Ds. And you need to be focused on the three Cs, the career, compensation, and culture. So let's talk about culture. I mean, that's a very important component. And, you know, we talked about leadership, and I like to talk about it because when you're a sales leader, the keyword here is leader, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, unfortunately, I think people think of leadership as a kind of soft, squishy kind of concept, right? But to me, it's rock solid. It's a skill set that you can develop, and it's very necessary to lead, to manage people to achieve high performance, right? It's kind of like they're the ones who emphasize the concept of people and salespeople, right? Mm-hmm. And leadership is really rock solid. It's a skill set. You can learn it. You can study it. It's been studied. And there's human psychology sort of behind the scenes that if you're not effectively leading, communicating, and working with people as their leader, you're not going to get the best results. It's a fact. It's known. And the same thing with culture. It's perceived as soft and squishy and fluffy. But the reality is that if you think of the culture correctly, then it produces high-performing teams and you hit your goals. And you know, sales is the heartbeat of the organization. If you're building any business, whether it's $100 million in sales or a billion or tens of billions of dollars, it's the revenues, the sales that keeps the company going. And the culture drives behaviors, drive those sales results. Mm-hmm. So it's really important stuff. And we know sales culture is not about ping pongs and whatever else. It's the behaviors. It's the things that we celebrate and things we tolerate or don't tolerate. So with that sort of said, tell us your view. I wanted to emphasize the importance of culture and leadership, but tell us your view on how you create the right culture. How do you reinforce that internally?
Yeah, sure. So to your point, I definitely think it is worth it to kind of re-emphasize that again, that sales is a really hard job. You win and lose by the culture you build. There's no way around that. So if you aren't thinking about culture, and to your point, Zoran, it's something that people see as like, all right, this soft thing on the side, I know I have to do it, so I'll do it. I don't really care too much about it. If you have a really strong culture, your team can literally do anything. And, you know, when you think about a culture, it's really important to define it and to make sure you're constantly reinforcing it. And for us at Sixth Sense, and kind of what I've done in my past, is the way we define our culture is based off this is an acronym of FAMILY. FAMILY stands for fun, accountability, mindfulness, integrity, love, and yes. So every single thing we're doing, every action point must orient towards that culture. And I will say, you reward when people are living that culture, but you also penalize when people are not. So we talk about this whole thing about, you know, you're saying that you're mentioning earlier, people not showing up to a meeting on time. That's accountability. If you are not coming to our meeting on time, if you are late for assignments, you are not living the portion of our team that drives our overall success. And that's a problem. On the flip side, if you're that person who takes the yes mentality, and it's always that person who's helping others, trying to find a way to dig themselves into other projects to make the overall group more successful, we will most definitely highlight that. And, you know, it's really important, because people always look at culture as that thing of like, you know, whatever, it's just this thing, but you have to have a strong culture, and it has to be defined in order to reap benefits from it.
Yeah. And you said it earlier, it's like you have great star players in the NFL. They really are stars. I mean, they're like some of the best in terms of the numbers they put up. But you put a bunch of really great stars together and you don't create that culture. You don't create the right way to drive the right behaviors. You're not going to get the results you want. You're going to get a very average season. And I love the acronym FAMILY. So it's fun, accountability, mindfulness, integrity, love, and yes. I really like that. I might just copy that over, at least some version of it. It's just so good. And that's part of Sixth Sense, like company-wide or just your sales organization?
Yeah, so it's definitely company-wide, but I would say within my org, it is something that I probably emphasize more than most. It's really, really important. Like, it's a part of our onboarding. Like, one of the first things that we do to people before we even show them how to use the tech, how to sell, is to reinforce this is our culture and this is what we stand for. So it's something that I really care about.
I really like that. Who invented FAMILY? Do you know? Is it your CEO?
I believe it was our CEO. Don't quote me on that, but I do believe it was our CEO.
So interesting. I really like that. So tell us a little bit about some of the traditions you have on the sales team that come directly from you, as you know, that you potentially may have brought on as a former NFL player.
Yeah. So like I said earlier, I would definitely say the competition aspect is something that we really care about. We bring that on in terms of like, we sometimes do call blitzes where we'll sit down together and make sure we have as the entire team, everyone's calling into a certain amount of accounts and see who wins. Obviously, that's the easiest one. But I think through anything, it's always some kind of competition, whether we're testing out a different channel or a different message, or at the end of the day, just seeing who has the highest quota attainment. That's by far the most common thing you'll see with what I'm bringing to my team from the NFL. Just the,
how about fun? What about fun? Because you have fun as the first one in FAMILY. Tell us about
that. Yeah. So fun is an interesting one, because you can't really, it's organic. If it's inorganic, then it's not actually fun. And I will say, especially with COVID going on right now, a lot of teams are trying to figure out ways to orchestrate fun for their teams. And you can't, it's tough.
Yeah. You
can't really force the fun. But what I will say is if I ever catch someone like going back and forth on a funny exchange through Slack, or someone like, we have, as I mentioned earlier, we have the meme of the week where we're kind of making fun of each other and highlighting anything that we see in sales, we really make it a point to like have fun in that moment and to broadcast it across the organization. So fun is definitely one that's challenging right now because of COVID, but whether it was happy hours or sometimes we just do like dance parties in the room.
Over Zoom?
Yeah, we would do it. That's what we would do. And like even last year, we, you know, Halloween costumes, there's so many ways to incorporate it, but you do want to make sure that you're making it organic, not inorganic. And as something you always kind of push the team to do every single month or so.
I like that. And I also like, I mean, obviously accountability is critical. What about mindfulness? What is that? Give us like a quick example.
So mindfulness is actually really important as well. So, you know, one thing that I didn't really talk too much about is in terms of how I hire my teams. I hire my teams with diversity and thought as a huge principle. And the reality is, like, it's not pure demographics. It's like we have people from all walks of life, but I'm more concerned about people that come from different environments, different experiences, and what I can contribute to the team. And the reality is, because we have such a diverse team, you have to be mindful of what you're doing and what you're saying to make everyone else in the group feel respected and appreciated. So the mindfulness aspect is just honestly being inclusive to all that we have on the team and not kind of going off in silos and kind of butting up with this one person over here, but not talking to anyone else. But that's probably the most important aspect of the mindfulness, which is really important, especially if you're looking to build a diverse team.
Yeah, I really like it. I think I told you, I started my career at Merrill Lynch in New York. I was in investment banking. And Merrill Lynch had these core values. And one of them was, which I haven't seen much at other companies since that time. It is out there, but not as, I don't see it as often, but it was respect for the individual, right? So everybody really, and I like that. I think making that one of the sort of substantive, tangible core pieces of your culture, of your core values, and emphasizing that importance of being respectful to each other, I really like that. I've always been a fan and I've always coached my team that, you know, communication with each other, you have to respect every individual. Bring yourself to work. Bring your whole self to work, I guess. Mm-hmm. But don't bring bad communication or kind of unprofessional behaviors to work. Mm-hmm. One of the things I ask and try to coach people to do is that when you're communicating with others, remember, this is a work environment. It's business communications. Mm-hmm. Like if you're getting emotional about something, that doesn't belong here. Right. You may not disagree with issues. That's perfectly fine. But we cannot let the situation ever become unprofessional, argumentative, which creates a toxic chemistry on the team. And to your point of being mindful, like being mindful of others, from diversity to respecting people's opinions, to not having conflict and confrontation with other people, you can definitely disagree. And we should disagree on issues if you feel there's a better way to achieve higher levels of results. But let's debate issues, not each other.
Exactly.
Right? We can disagree, as they say, without being disagreeable. And I think that's part of that mindfulness. Is that right?
Exactly. 100%.
I like that. I really like that. I like family acronym. So I know we have about 13 minutes or so left. And I want to talk about, so you're at Sixth Sense. Obviously, you're in the business of ABM and Intent. You know, we're also in the sales and marketing technology space. And we're kind of like neighbors in that sense, if you will, in the ABM and Intent. We do something very different. But tell us what your company does. And from your perspective, tell us about ABM. I'm sure there are a couple of listeners here, particularly maybe CEOs of billion-dollar companies, for example. They may not be focused on ABM or talking to their marketing and sales leaders about that concept or strategy. So tell us more about that and what can listeners, what insights can they gain?
Yeah, sure. So I would definitely say the whole concept of ABM nowadays has been everywhere, which is awesome. It's great to see that people are a lot more focused on trying to find ways to win. But essentially what Sixth Sense does is we're an account engagement platform, which helps teams identify the companies that are most likely to do business with you. Once you've been able to identify them, then sending the message that's most relevant to them based upon what kind of research they're doing, what kind of activity they're showing, and then ultimately converting them into opportunities. And when you're thinking about the whole concept of ABM, for those of you who aren't very familiar or those who are, it's basically just taking as data-driven an approach as possible to making sure that you're driving the right kind of business for your organization. And with the whole thing around ABM, there are kind of different layers to it. You could take ABM as the approach of, I just want this target accounts. I don't really know why I want these target accounts, but these are the ones I want to go after. Or you could use a company like Sixth Sense where we essentially tell you based upon your previous customers engagement before they started talking to you, which of your current prospective customers align with that. So you should go after those accounts because they're more likely to convert into opportunities. So again, there are definitely like various layers of what ABM is, but lo and behold, it's more of just like, how can I take a smarter, more data-driven way of going after the right accounts that present the highest opportunity for us to convert accounts into business?
Very interesting. And obviously your company is very well known right now. Your CMO, she just published a book, right? And by the way, tell us about that. You mentioned she's like the best marketing executive. Tell us a little bit because I definitely want to invite her to the podcast at some point as well.
Yeah. That is awesome. So I'd also encourage you all for those listening, if you are trying to find ways to learn a little bit more about ABM, she has a book, No Forms, No Spam, No Cold Calls. which you can kind of check out. It's actually on Amazon. I think there's even a Kindle version or audiobook as well. But it has a pretty good like strategic as well as tactical outlook on how you can drive ABM. But, you know, working with Latiny has been absolutely a thrill. You know, I've kind of had the pleasure of obviously working in sales development, business development roles where you kind of roll into either sales or marketing. And so she's the CMO of our company. So I report directly into her. And a lot of the things that she's like the biggest idea person. And it's always so cool to see kind of what she comes up with, and especially not just coming up with, but how it wins. So it's been a huge pleasure working with her and seeing kind of things she's done to help our company get to where we're at.
And it's super interesting. So you just said something that I wanted to ask you about. So you're on the sales leadership side. You have the entire SDR team, but it reports in through the CMO.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. That's actually not typical, but it's a very interesting structure, right? Because I think in your company, perhaps that's a great lesson also, is that all the meetings that your team sets up, you know, whether inbound or outbound, goes through the marketing, perhaps funnel, mm-hmm. right? Then gets potentially lead scored and qualified before it goes over to the account executives, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I will say, I mean, it's one of those things where a lot of different companies have their perspective as to whether or not sales development teams should report into sales or marketing. I've done both. And I can say that if you are looking for really strong alignment, if you are looking for the SDR, BDR team to really take advantage of all things that marketing team is doing, I've seen it work really well. And I personally like it. But on the flip side, you know, reporting into sales, part of what we do as sales development reps is we want eventually have our reps move on to sales roles. So going to sales, it actually makes it a little bit easier to kind of align them to make sure they're going down that path and can eventually become future sellers. But what I will say, the most important thing is if you're trying to figure out whether or not you want to be in sales or marketing, it actually depends on the leader. Your leader has to have a really strong ability of how to sell as well as how to do marketing so he or she can kind of pull levers accordingly. But that's, again, that's the most important thing of whatever route you choose to take.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. You know, I think that sales development teams, for the most part, it's all sales motions. Mm-hmm. It's not really marketing per se in a full sense of marketing. But I do understand that in many organizations, it can work that the SDR teams under marketing. Ultimately, they have to have a great sales development rep leader, head coach, which is like you, who's very good at coaching and developing those sales motions.
Exactly.
In order for it to be under a marketing leader, in my opinion, just because these are slightly different disciplines.
Yeah, I completely agree. And part of that too is, and this isn't always the case with SDR leaders, but I closed business for a period of time before I jumped into this role. So I have a pretty strong familiarity with what it takes to kind of push a deal through the line. And when I'm coaching my team and building out processes, I actually have the end goal in mind as opposed to just pushing out meetings. So again, that's the reason why it's so, and I will say it's probably a little bit easier to learn the marketing side than the sales side, because like those selling motions sometimes just experience. But I would encourage anyone who's trying to figure out what makes the most sense to try and get someone who has dipped his or her feet in both to some extent, because they'll be able to kind of align everyone together appropriately.
Totally. And by the way, your deal sizes, they're kind of like large mid-market, low enterprise, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So we tend to hover around the lower portion to upper. It's even some seven-figure deals of six-figure deals, more or less. So it's more like that 100K-ish range, a little bit more, a little bit less.
Over 100K. You know, it's interesting. I have some opinions on that. People say like a $100,000 deal is an enterprise deal. I don't think so at all. I think that's, I was doing an interview on our podcast with Jamal Reimer, who's kind of, he was a top 1%er at Oracle. He closed in his lifetime deals that are tens of millions of dollars each deal,
mm-hmm.
each deal, right? Mm-hmm. And most people have, you know, the entire annual quota that's less than that, right? But he closed three deals that were 50 million and above per deal. So mm-hmm. when somebody says enterprise deals to me, and I've deliberately went to saw at IBM after business school in order to learn sort of the best practices of selling and managing sales teams. And, you know, million-dollar deals are not even considered big deals, right? And today you can close hundreds of thousands of dollars over the phone. I mean, earlier this year, we closed an $847,000 deal over the phone. I mean, this is doable.
And it's happening. People are doing what you do right now.
Yeah, but when people say like, you know, $100,000, that's an enterprise deal. I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, it depends on so many definitions. But to me, in the SaaS world, I would think it's kind of like, it's mid-market still, I think, because mm-hmm. you can close much larger deals. But that's just my opinion. But I would say that your SDRs probably have to be more sophisticated than many because they're not trying to drum up meetings for $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 deal. They're trying to drum up meetings that are potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars in ultimate transaction value, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of when we go back to what I mentioned earlier around like the transactional seller versus a consultative seller. My team, because we are our companies at the point where it's more that like upper mid-market, lower enterprise, whatever you want to call it, you have to understand the company's business and be able to present something, even as an SDR, before you even get into the your foot in the door. Like you have to present something that people are going to feel comfortable about bringing to like more executive leaders. And if you don't have that consultative arm, it just doesn't really work.
Yeah, I'm sure it's harder to coach and develop the fundamentals for your SDR team because doing what the SDRs need to do for the enterprise deals, again, I don't really want to call $100,000 enterprise. To me, it's kind of mid-market, low enterprise, but let's call it that because that's what most SaaS folks refer to them. $100,000, low number enterprise deal. But even for that, they have to be coached much more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's not the same as like a $5,000 deal meeting.
No. So when you look at like the 5K, 10K, maybe even 20K, you could typically have a pretty big TAM and you could just push pure volume as the metric to get your numbers. Like if you have a team that's just pushing out a ton of calls, a ton of emails, it's a very easy flow to back into your number. But the reality is with a consultative SDR, BDR, it's not about the volume. You can push as much out there and people aren't going to bite it if you're not talking about their business. But one thing I do want to kind of leave people with is if they're trying to find, if they are in that consultative sale, there's a book out there by the SVP of sales at SalesLoft, Jeremy Donovan. And there's someone else included, I forget her name. It's called Leading Sales Development. And in that book, they talk about the main qualities to look for when you're recruiting. One of them is general mental ability, which is basically just intelligence. If you have a team that is in the enterprise space, you need them to be consultative and intelligent in some capacity. But the problem is, this kind of goes back to what I was talking about with intangible and judging. How do you assess if someone is intelligent or not? And what I've kind of noticed is intelligence as an SDR, BDR is whether or not someone has the ability to understand a business and the person's job, relate it back to your product, and provide value based upon that. And similar to like doing your GMAT or SAT, you can strengthen that arm if you recognize that someone doesn't have it because you know exactly what it is. It's the combination between those three.
Really interesting. It's funny. I was going to ask you like, what's a book you recommend? But you did it right there because you know it's important to continue to evolve and learn. Listen, this was really great. How do people find you? Where can they find you to say hi and learn more from you?
Yeah, sure. So definitely reach out to me on LinkedIn, Ernest Owusu, ErnestOwusu. Or if you do Twitter, I'm the Ernest Owusu. And funny thing about that is there are actually a lot of Ernest Owusus out there. That's the reason why I chose that. So just reach out to me if you have any questions about this. More than happy to answer them. But yeah, far away.
That's awesome. Listen, thank you so much for making the time. It was really great to connect and talk to you. Super interesting story. Love it. I wish you continuing success. You're going to kill it. You're going to be great. And yeah, well, thank you and see you next time.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. That was great.